So I wanted to start out this podcast series by talking about pain in regards to being trans. So in my opinion, being trans is constant pain. There's internal pain where you are causing the pain to yourself, and there's external pain where outside forces are causing the pain on you. And those two kinds of pain can be further broken up into physical pain and emotional pain, and you get both or all of them as a trans woman. To start out with the internal pain, there's gender dysphoria. Now, gender dysphoria is a clinical definition of distress that's caused by knowing that your assigned gender at birth, or your physical body parts, or your social role in society doesn't match the gender that you feel. I think maybe in a lot of ways, everybody has a tiny bit of gender dysphoria, but it's not like to the point where they need to transition. Everyone's kind of on a spectrum of their own gender. And, maybe you get effeminate men, you get very masculine women, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are trans. It becomes an issue of transhood when it's very overwhelming for their whole personhood. So let me give you some examples of my own, just to make this a little clearer. A big part of my desire to transition stems from that I have never felt like I fit in the male community. I was assigned male at birth, and I have a penis, and I just have never fit in with men, and I have, on the contrary, fit in very well with women. At family gatherings, when the men would go off to do whatever they do, talk about hunting and all that kind of stuff, I would much rather hang out in the kitchen with the women that are, making food, preparing the meal. It's more than just that. It's also, as a child, I would fit in better playing house with girls at elementary than I would playing football with the boys. And that's just a very small part of it, but that's maybe an example of how socially, as a trans woman, you don't really fit in with the gender that you have been assigned. And like, that's not everything. Social side, there's a lot of people that just don't fit in socially with their gender, and that doesn't make them trans. But on top of that, gender dysphoria is also, your body itself, the physical aspects of your body. And so having a penis for me, I have had sex with a lot of women, and I've just always felt like something isn't right there, that I'm pressured to fill a dominant role. And you can say, well, not all men have to be dominant. There are a lot of women who want to be dominant in the bedroom. And that's like, okay. But coupled with the social side of me being trans, kind of more of an indicator that, hey, I have gender dysphoria and the solution is to transition. Anymore now, I want to have relationships with men. I look passing. I look like I am a woman. First take, I'm a woman. They interact with me. They still think I'm a woman. They can go on several dates with me and still think, hey, she's a woman. Then I have to, when I get close to being intimate, I have to reveal to them, hey, by the way, I'm trans and I have a penis. And that throws my relationships for a loop in that some men are not comfortable with dating someone who has a penis because of that gender role that women have a vagina and men have a penis. And so, coupled with those other things, further adds to, hey, this person is trans, not just a feminine man. So there's those things. I also had a lot of angst about going through puberty, and I didn't know how to explain it at the time, and I just kind of carried those things with me. I didn't appreciate going through male puberty and, having a growth spurt, and now I'm 5'10, maybe 5'10 and a half, And I actually lost some of my size. I was closer to 5'11, 5'11 and a half, but I think I've lost about an inch of height since I've transitioned. And that's due to physiology related to switching hormones. So, there is internal pain associated with gender dysphoria that you carry with your entire life. I would look in the mirror and I'd see facial features about myself after taking my makeup on, after even having a great day, and then I'd take my makeup off for the night and I'd just cry and cry and cry because I noticed things about myself that were masculine that made me feel like you're not a woman, even though I, for the most part, felt like a woman. So that's gender dysphoria, and that's definitely internal pain. Other people don't cause it. There's also the self-doubt and the inadequacy that you feel as a trans woman. You're constantly feeling like you're never enough. And this is typical for a lot of women that you just feel like you have to meet certain standards as a woman. And it's not okay that we feel this way, but as a trans woman, it's like you also have these inadequacy feelings of like, it's not just that you can't have kids, it's that your body never had a vagina or ovaries to have kids with. Like, you don't have a uterus, so you're not going to bear children, and you're not going to be a mother, like a birth-giving mother in that sense. So you have to settle on, best case you can adopt, or you're going to live your life without kids. And that's a huge aspect of what society sees a woman as women are supposed to be the mothers, the birth givers, the caretakers of other people and children. And as a trans woman, some of that stuff is just off limits to you. There's also the self-doubt of like you start to pass and people don't notice, but then you're tricking yourself and tripping up on your own thoughts of like, yeah, but they can see through that. I'm not that passing. I'm just a faker. And you feel a lot of imposter syndrome where you're like, I am this way. I know in my core that I'm a woman, but I feel like such an imposter because my pathway to womanhood was not the same as other people. Or your boobs are never going to be as big as other women. Or at least, probably not as big as the other women in your family. Most trans women will tell you that a good estimate for your finished size is going to be roughly the average of all of your siblings minus a cup. And having smaller breasts is kind of a inadequacy feeling to a lot of trans women. Furthermore, the fact that we have to get surgeries to even compare. Like, if you've gone through male puberty, like myself, I started transitioning when I was 30. And, I had already lived this entire life, had a life history as a man, but like a struggling man, like one that I knew I was trans, I didn't want to fully accept it, and I fought with it, and it caused me a lot of problems. And having reached 30 before starting hormone therapy, there's a lot of things that were finalized in my body towards what is masculine, and I can't go back and change those. And so I eventually had FFS, which is facial feminization surgery. I didn't have a lot of work done, but some trans women have to get a lot of work done. They have to get rhinoplasty, like a nose job. They have to get cranioplasty. They have to get brow lifts. They have to get chin reductions. They have to get lip lifts and lip fillers. And some people, even to feel good about themselves, to look the way that they believe they should look, they have to get entire facial reconstruction. And comparing yourself to other women, comparing yourself is a bad thing, first of all. But comparing yourself to other women is like, okay, well, it's obvious that I'm trans because I haven't had surgery. And then if I get surgery, I'm still not a quote unquote natural woman. If I have to get breast augmentation, I'm not a natural woman. I don't have natural boobs. HRT can only do so much. Some people get incredibly lucky and they end up with double Ds or triple Ds just off of HRT. And other people get an A cup. Me personally, I have a B cup and I am okay with that. Would I like a C cup? Absolutely. But I don't know that that's in the cards for me, and that's okay. I've come to terms with that. I don't want to get breast augmentation just to resolve that. So, internal pain is real. It can also come in the form of physical pain, not just emotional pain. A lot of trans people, because of their gender dysphoria or because of their self-doubt, self-esteem issues, they resort to self-harm. Some trans women resort to self-harm before they even transition because they're facing this internal conflict due to their gender dysphoria, but they don't know how to face it. They resort to cutting or, all these other eating disorders because of that. Any self-harm imaginable, trans people are more likely to resort to alcoholism and other addictions to mask their gender dysphoria, and those can cause physical pain towards this individual. I'll get into that towards the end of this podcast, but I want to shift gears and start talking about external pain sources. And those can come both physical and emotional. Physical violence is external pain that is physical. Trans women have to be especially careful because if they don't pass, there are plenty of bullies out there who can target them when they see them on site. I've heard of women having bottles thrown at them, knives thrown at them, guns pulled on them, shots fired at them, being physically beat up, raped, and anything under the sun just because of them being visibly trans. If you pass, which is kind of the situation I'm in, I have to be careful that some guy gets to know me and they spend 3, 4 dates with me. And then we get intimate, and then they don't know that I'm trans, and they see that I have a penis, and they think that I'm catfishing them or that I'm deceptive, and they resort to physical violence towards me for being deceptive, quote unquote. Or they're okay with me being trans, we get intimate, and then they have internal phobias that lead them to take out their frustrations about themselves, about maybe attraction to men or just being attracted to a trans woman, and they take those out on me physically because that's an easy way for them to cope with what they perceive as inadequacies. I don't think it's an inadequacy for a cisgender man to be attracted to a trans woman. In fact, the more people I meet, I actually think that it is more of a manly behavior to be attracted to trans women than it is to just be attracted to cisgender women. That's my opinion, that you have to be a serious man. You have to be comfortable with your sexuality in order to be comfortable being attracted to trans women, I think. I don't think that every man can do it. And I think you have to be really in touch with your masculinity to say, this is a trans woman and I'm attracted to her. Those things can lead to physical violence, but there's also non-physical external pain, and a lot of it comes down to emotional pain. Just because somebody is trans, there are plenty of people out there who will very consciously be rude to us. I have had people purposely misgender me just to get under my skin. I have had people making digs at me for being trans, that I will never be a woman, is the argument line they're trying to use. And I have to sadly point this out, that it's not just with cisgender hetero people. It happens with other trans women who, in order to cope with some of our inadequacies as trans women, we might target other trans women who we perceive as better, kind of like the crab in the bucket type of deal, where we see another trans woman excelling and so we have to pull them down. I've also seen it with lesbian women who say, well, you're not really a woman, and therefore I'll never be attracted to you, which is okay. But when they do that in a way to dig at us, to dig at trans women, to bring us down, to say, like, you're less than human, you're less than a regular person because you are trans. And that just emotionally can wreck some of us. Those experiences I've described have personally impacted me. So this was before I transitioned. I wanted to transition. I was in the closet. I didn't know how to start. I still didn't know fully what it meant to be trans. I wasn't going to therapy, but I had a coworker that was gay and I was friends with him. He was married. This was the time period, a couple years after gay marriage had become legalized. And he told me, I started this conversation with him about trans people. He told me, as a gay man, saying, oh, trans women are just, they just have mental problems. So they're like gay men, but they have mental problems. And so I don't really include them in the queer community. And like, as a closeted trans woman, that really ate at me because it was like, do I have a mental problem? Do I have something wrong with me? Like, is that why I want to transition? At the time, I wasn't really sure I was attracted to men. Like, I was kind of attracted to men. I knew that I had this attraction to the male penis, but not really attracted to men. But I was very, very in the closet about that and probably would never admit it to other people and only to myself at certain times. Having another person of the queer community tell me that before I even transitioned, it still kind of bothers me to this day. And it makes me think that there's something wrong with him, that he can't be inclusive of trans women like that. So that's just the rudeness side. There's also politics right now. It's 2025, and being a trans woman is a very scary thing politically because, you know, if people find out who I am, they can use me as, for good or bad, a case example of a trans woman. And I don't want to be that. I just want to be seen as a woman. I'm not a political figure. I started this podcast because I feel like people don't know, but I ultimately want to remain anonymous. I don't want people to know I'm trans, and I don't want people to ask me questions in person or not in person. Like, I don't want them to associate me as a trans woman that has all the answers. I just want to get rid of this part of my life, finish my transition, if that's even possible, and move on from this and just focus on being a regular woman in my late 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s or even hit 100. Yeah, politics right now are very scary. They cause a lot of emotional turmoil to trans women. And on top of the emotional side, politics are kind of stirring the pot and making it more unsafe physically for trans women. I live in the state of Utah, and in the state of Utah right now, there are laws that say facilities cannot permit me to go to the female changing room just because I have a penis. I have taken the steps to legally transition. My IDs all say that I am female. My birth certificate says I was born a woman. All the way through my body, I'm a woman, except for that I have a penis. And Utah state law says, until I have the surgery, I am not really a woman 100%. There are situations where I just don't qualify as a woman. And one of those situations is using the female bathroom. There's some loopholes there. It really comes down to being confronted about it. It's an untried law, and so I don't know what would happen if somebody said, you can't be in here, I'm calling the cops. I don't know if the cops could really come and do anything, because mostly the law states that facilities can't allow this, and that facilities have to provide gender-neutral bathrooms and changing areas for trans women such as myself. But I don't think that me going into a bathroom, I don't think that I would be confronted. You know, it would have to be a very bizarre situation for someone to be like, you can't be here because you're trans. Because I try to be a nice person and polite, and I don't think that there's any Karens monitoring the bathroom that would really police it on me. It's not like I show my penis off in the bathroom. But, you know, politics is a source of emotional stress and pain. Some nights I stay up and I'm thinking about how pathetic I am because I can't even go to the bathroom. Or I can't go to a public pool because my bulge of my swimming suit is going to be obvious. A lot of that is political. Some of that is internal. Some of that is external with people being rude and confrontational about it. So I want to finish this podcast off with another form of pain that really solidifies why I say that being trans is just constant pain. If you intend to get surgery, which I intend to get the surgery, for me, everything is in place except for that I don't have hair removal. So in order to get bottom surgery, as it's called, or vaginoplasty, they use the skin that is already existent. They use the organs that are already existent. You know, your skin is an organ. So they're going to use my scrotum or my ball sack, and they're going to use my penile shaft. They take the penile shaft and they flip it inside out and use that for the interior part of the vagina. And then they use the scrotum for the labia. And they can use some of that skin for both. Or they can find skin elsewhere on your body, such as your colon, and use that as the interior of your vagina, your neovagina. Problem is, it's a more risky surgery. There's more steps involved, and it has a different feel or impact compared to what's called an inverted penis or inverted penile surgery. And not every surgeon can perform the other surgeries. They're not trained in them. So for me, I have to get hair removal, and there's really only two options, but one of those options is not FDA certified as a long-term hair removal solution, but it's the easier solution. If you have dark hairs, dark pubic hairs, you can get laser hair removal using a laser, and they basically shine a laser at the skin, at the hair, after it's been cut off as short as possible. And the energy from the laser gets congregated in the darker colored hair. And the hope is that it gets hot enough that it will burn the surrounding cells. So the objective is to damage or destroy the cells that produce the hair, and not really the hair itself. The hair is a byproduct of the skin cells that produce the hair. So laser hair removal is shining a laser, targeting a whole cluster of hairs in the hopes that they get heated up and burn the skin cells around them. It is painful, and it has like a 6-week recovery time, and it's not approved by the FDA as a long-term solution. It also doesn't work on lighter hairs. So if you have blonde hair or red hair, it may not work on you. If you have solid black hair, but you have dark skin, it also may not work on you because the skin itself will absorb more of the laser, causing it to burn surface skin rather than the hair itself and heating up the hair enough to burn the skin around it. The FDA does say that a procedure called electrolysis is a long-term hair removal solution. The way that it works is a needle, which is attached to a FM radio transmitter. Now, this is some interesting science, so bear with me. The FM radio transmitter will vibrate or send a vibration out from the needle, but a short distance. It will vibrate water molecules at a frequency that they will heat up to boiling. It's just a tiny needle. They insert it under the skin right by where there's a hair, and they activate this radio transmitter. It heats up the water in the cells surrounding where the needle is, it potentially will damage the DNA inside the cells and other aspects of the cells, causing them to cease functioning, to cease operating as a hair-producing cell. The needles themselves, there's different kinds of needles, but a common type of needle has a ceramic coating on the bulk of it, but then it's exposed on the tip so that it inserts under the skin. The ceramic, it blocks the transmission, but the very tip will generate the heat around it. It attempts to burn skin cells underneath the skin, leaving the surface skin intact and destroying the cells that produce the hair. After they do this to a cluster of cells surrounding this needle, they pluck the hair out to both indicate that this procedure has been operated on this hair, but also because once this happens, there's potential for an infection if they leave the hair in. So it's a combination of needles, burning, and plucking. So if you've ever had any of those things done before, if you've ever been burned, or you've ever had your hairs plucked, or you've had to be poked with a needle, you know the kind of pain that I feel on a weekly basis. A technician does this work and they have to target each individual hair. So it's one by one and it's a painful process. After they're done with this procedure, the pain isn't over. I still have a genital area that's recovering from a burn, and that can take a day or two for me. It can take several days for some people, just depending on your pain tolerance and how well you take care of the skin, how well you recover. My body seems to recover fairly quickly, and so I do it in the morning before work. I go to work, and after an hour, I don't necessarily feel it. My body has become numb, and I can do my duties at work and go home. Now, I say that with a large asterisk because certain areas of the skin really, really hurt, and you know, I am in pain for that entire day. I just have learned to manage it. So if you're getting that weekly, you're in pain during the appointment, you're in pain during that day, and possibly the day after, but that also bars you from being sexually intimate. You don't really want somebody playing with that skin if you've recently had it burned. That impacts your sexual life, that impacts your social life, makes you maybe not want to go do certain activities. Kind of just live with it. You change your lifestyle to accommodate it until you can get the surgery. But if you don't get hair removal and you get this surgery, you are more likely to have infections and you'll also have hair growing inside your neovagina. Think about that for a second. And if you are interested in penis in vagina sex, how many men do you think are comfortable with having sex with somebody who has a hairy vagina inside? There's a lot of men who have a problem with hairy women on their external body parts, let alone the internal body parts. So getting hair removal is essential if you want to get surgery. And like I said, in my state, you are barred from using changing rooms until you get that surgery. And by the way, you might get laser hair or electrolysis on your face just because you have beard hair. I've spent hours and hours and hours getting electrolysis done on my face so that I don't have a beard. I'm not quite done with it, but I have shifted priorities to getting bottom surgery now. And so I'll have to go back to getting that. And in the meantime, I'm shaving on a daily basis any hairs that are still there. Pain is commonplace for being trans, and if you get any kind of trans surgeries, breast augmentation, facial feminization surgery, bottom surgery, you're going to face pain through either the surgery or the recovery of the surgery itself. You can't get around this kind of pain. It's an aspect of transition. And so next time that you see a trans woman, maybe you know a trans woman, or maybe you don't know trans women, but you're just curious about what we have to go through, just remember me saying, being trans is constant pain. I'm hoping that after I get the surgery, the only pain that I will feel is a once a week injection of the hormones that I need. Thank you for listening. I hope that this has been informative. And again, if you do find out who I am in person, please let me remain anonymous. I am able to provide this behind the scenes truthful information simply because I know it's not going to follow me around anywhere. I'm hoping that through this podcast that people will see a side of trans life that maybe they're not getting because all of the trans women that are speaking out are doing so on the form of they want to make money at it, or they want to be popular, or they've somehow become a political figure. I don't want that. I just want you to know this information so that it's out there and people can use it and make better decisions and be more accepting of us trans women. So thank you.